love that intro because it uses my name. Hello, hello, hello. Happy Friday and welcome to Drive Through HR. I am here with Will Thompson, Will Recruits. Very excited to talk to you today, Will.
Glad to be here.
So, Will, is this your first time on the Drive Through?
This is my first time. Yeah, absolutely. Excited to be part of the show.
That's awesome. I am excited that I get to guest host today so that I can talk with you. I am Crystal Miller, if you are listening. You can follow us along on Twitter at the hashtag DTHR for DriveThruHR, and we will be looking at any questions you might ask there. So, Will, here's the drill. I'm about to ask you what's going on, and you can tell me what's keeping you up at night. I guess I just did. What's keeping you up at night?
Yeah, no worries. So, my name is Will Thompson, and I am the Global Sales and Marketing Recruiter for Rosetta Stone. And, you know, I'm also an avid blogger. You can find me at Bullseye Recruiting. I do a lot of writing for the recruitment industry, and I've been in the industry for about 20 years. And, you know, my passion is to just really learn a lot about the industry. But what keeps me up at night, or you know, as a global recruiter, you know, I juggle a lot of things. You have a lot of balls in the air. Prioritizing things, prioritizing time, you know, making every minute count. As you know, as a recruiter, you can go from zero to hero or hero to zero at any given time. So, you know, just managing expectations with the client and the manager and the candidate, and then you know, working through multiple time zones and making sure that, you know, all the boxes are checked when you're hiring somebody. But, you know, always anticipating situations, thinking ahead, you know, since I do the full life cycle, you know, always looking for new talent and, you know, consistently learning and dealing with counter offers and things like that. So that's what's on the top of my mind.
All right, well, so let's dig into some of that, because you just listed out probably a year's worth of shows, topics, of things that are keeping you up. Let's talk about planning. As we roll into Q4, that sounds like a really good place to start. Are you doing your 2015 plan, and what does that look like for a recruiter? Because you don't necessarily have control of the headcount or even necessarily the spend. So how do you plan for 2015?
Yes, I mean, I specifically recruit in a niche, right? Sales and marketing is my niche. So, you know, I kind of have an idea by working with business leaders, you know, what they may be anticipating in the year 2015 and what kind of candidates. And, you know, as a recruiter for salespeople, it is kind of a revolving door. I mean, either you make your numbers or you don't. So you always have to kind of look for specific kind of talent, you know, within certain regions and certain things. So that's how I plan, is just really working closely with my clients and understanding their needs and then preparing, because you never know at any given time when you're going to need a salesperson in a certain area. So just always communicating, always talking, always prospecting and building that pipeline at any given time.
So pipelines, that's interesting. We can kind of segue over to that. Talent communities versus talent networks and pipelines, where do you fall in that argument?
Talent communities versus talent pipelines.
Do you believe that there are talent communities? Is it all really networks? There seems to be some debate about that. Where do you fall?
So, yeah, I'm not a big talent community individual. You know, I do believe that you do have to build those strong pipelines and to find those right individuals. You want to elaborate any more?
As much as you want to or you don't. But so if you're not big into talent communities and you're into talent pipelining, what does a pipeline look like? If I were not in recruiting and I were just a business professional, but I was talking with my recruiter who's talking about a pipeline of candidates, I would think that what they mean is that there's someone they could turn to right at that minute and they would be ready to interview for a job. Is that really what it's like, or what's a talent pipeline?
No, I mean, a talent pipeline is, you know, you're always building a bench. You're always having those communication with people that are those passive candidates. You know, telling your story, telling, you know, getting them engaged with you as a recruiter and having them understand, you know, what you're trying to accomplish and really, you know, setting them up for, you know, if an opportunity comes up down the line, you know, this is the kind of work we do and how we can help you. And it's just, you know, you never know in sales and marketing when an opportunity comes available in any area. So you're more or less just selling them on your company and what you're trying to accomplish and staying in touch. And, you know, if it's not with that company, then you can help them in another way, which can help as well.
What do other ways look like? If you're not helping them with your company, how else would you help them?
Well, for me, I mean, I believe I'm a strong networker, right? So six degrees of separation, someone who knows someone knows someone. So if you can't help them with your company, you may know another recruiter, you can help them with their company, then they're more likely to refer you to somebody else. So that it's all about referrals in this business, especially in sales. And if you build those deep relationships, then you can help find candidates easier.
Yeah, that's a definite. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were looking at how just alternative methods and sources for candidates. And one of the things that they were talking about was partnership recruiting with, like, the Workforce Commission in their state. Is that something that you find to be particularly fruitful when you're looking at working with professionals? Do we still see enough of enough unemployment within the professional ranks that proves to be a useful source, or maybe
no,
not so much? What do you think?
I really don't use the Workforce Commission. And a lot of the people, I mean, I can see where it would be beneficial for some lower level roles, but most of the positions that I do fill are pretty high level, and I haven't found much use with that at all. You know, I'm dealing with people with fairly high six-figure salaries, so to find them at the Workforce Commission is highly unlikely.
That's fair.
Especially
so,
with sales, because they could be, you know, if they've been unemployed, then they probably haven't hit their targets or their numbers and things like that. It's less because of, you know, a redundant situation or layoffs or things like that.
Man, I gotta imagine you have some fun recruiting stories. Because you do recruit salespeople, like, does it ever feel like when they're talking to you, you can almost be the fish that they're talking about growing and getting bigger? You know, I caught a 10-pound fish. No, I caught a 20-pound fish. I caught a 150-pound fish, and it was giant, and it took five people to hold. How do you, I mean, tell me about your cool stories and how you validate what you're told.
Yeah, so, I mean, salespeople are just that. They want to tell you, these big, grandiose stories of how they have done these great things, and I think it's about keeping them on track, you know, because things, if you ask questions like, tell me about, you know, the quotas you've achieved, what kind of products have you sold, what kind of companies have you sold into, they'll say, yeah, you know, I can do this. Well, how many phone calls do you make a day? You know, that it often tells you how willing they are to go out and talk to clients. It's interesting. I was talking to individuals, said, yeah, I make tons of calls, you know. I said, well, how many is that? I said, well, whatever it takes. He said, well, that was 10, you know. And I was thinking, how can an effective salesperson who has a $1 million quota make 10 phone calls a day? And they can't. So you really have to drill down and drill down and drill down and ask questions specifically to what their skill set is and then kind of filter through their tall stories, you know, the silver-tongued devils,
yeah,
that you're talking to.
I know some people ask for W-2s. I'm like, you know what? I don't need the details. I just need to see your W-2.
Yeah, I mean, I do that quite often. I mean, especially with people that are making the six-figure salaries, that, you know, they will say they made X amount of money, or they'll say, you know, their quota is, you know, they were going to make $200,000, but yet they hadn't hit any of their goals. So, you know, sure, you can have your on-target earnings could be $200,000, but if you haven't, you know, hit your goals, then you're really not doing or making what, you know, you say you're going to make.
Right.
So a W-2 is
Absolutely.
A good way to find out.
Hey, that's fair. What challenges do you have in your role?
Well, like my intro, I mean, I think that, you know, there's just a lot of juggling of parts with my role. You know, I deal on a global basis, so time zones, prioritizing your day. It's making sure that, you know, your relationships with your hiring managers are okay, managing their expectations, that your relationships with your candidates are okay. And then, you know, a lot of things that there's a lot involved with the onboarding piece that, you know, we take for granted as recruiters. We don't just wash our hands, especially as a corporate recruiter. We need to really, you know, spend time to be involved with that process to make sure that they stay, because you want to have them engaged employees rather than having to find somebody else in another 6 months or something like that because they had a bad onboarding experience or, you know, their recruitment experience wasn't what they wanted.
Yeah, okay, so I love that you're bringing that up because this is totally a hot-button issue for me. We spend a lot of time in talent attraction and branding and then in recruiting getting people jazzed about working for a company. And we say that recruiting is like dating, right? So maybe that means talent attraction is like the job, like the dating site ads or whatever. And then they meet and the recruiter takes over and they start courting and that's all awesome. And then they get engaged when the job offer comes around, or they get married on day one. Now they're at work. And then it's all of a sudden, man, it is really like a marriage. All of a sudden, everything is just, like, all of the pretense goes away. They stop being on their best behavior. Why do you think that is? Why do we stop caring, or do we stop caring?
I don't think it's stop caring. I think it's that, you know, a majority of recruiters have a lot on their plates, and, you know, they don't take the time to put it on their calendar. You know, let's, in the next, you know, 60 days or next 30 days, let's make a contact to see how they're doing. I just don't think a lot of recruiters do that extra step. So the courting does stop. And, you know, it's the little things that make you feel important and the individual feel important and really drives that culture. And recruiters can be a big piece of that. So, you know, that's something to always think and to take in mind when you bring somebody on board.
So if recruiters can be a big piece of that, how can they? What are some things that they can do?
Yeah, so, I mean, from the get-go, I mean, you know, you need to talk to the candidate about, you know, recruiting, bringing someone board, or you know, the thing is that when you hire somebody, you need to tell them the good and the bad and the ugly. You know, this is what you're going to expect. You know, this is they need to understand what kind of role they're getting into. And oftentimes what recruiters will do is say, hey, you know, this is the best opportunity, and nothing will ever go wrong. And, well, it's not true. You know, I mean, there's going to be some hiccups along the way. Let them know what to expect. You know, in a perfect world, everything would go great all the time, but it doesn't most of the time. Let them know. Stay engaged with them. Walk them through the process. Over-communicate with the individual. Make them feel wanted. And then when they get onboarded, just continually communicate with them. Because if you maintain that relationship, your job's going to become 10 times easier because you're going to be able to get the referrals that you need. And we all know that referrals are the best candidates you can find.
They can be, for sure. So, okay, let's talk about referral programs for a minute. Do you employ a referral program where you're at? And how effective is it? How can you judge an effective referral program? Because, I mean, let me just leave it there, see what you say, and then I might rebut.
Yeah, so I think referral programs are essential. I mean, you know, I've been in a number of companies. Some do it better than others. But, you know, I think it's the communication that, you know, you're really bringing in the culture that you want when you get the referrals, right? And that's the big piece that a lot of people miss is that culture piece. They may have all the skills, but they may not fit in correctly. So the referrals, usually they know somebody and they may fit in better. So I think that where I'm at currently does a really good job of, you know, keeping that culture, keeping me exciting, letting people know that you know, they can get people to come work for our company, and it works very well. But I have been at some other companies that don't do it as well, that don't communicate it, and you get people from all over, and you're not developing that deep culture that you desire.
So, okay, I was talking with Matt Charney last night. You know Matt, right?
Yep.
Yep. So he and I were talking about referral programs and culture and how much it really matters. And he's like, you know, if you want your referral program to work, you just pay him more money. He may have been joking. I'm going to assume he's joking. But do you think it's all about the dollar in creating an effective recruiting program, or does that actually, can that hurt your recruiting referral program in the long run?
You know, Matt's probably not too far off. I think that, you know, definitely when you pay somebody a little bit more money, they may be more engaged or more willing to help out. Otherwise, it may not be a priority for them. But, you know, if a person is really invested within their company, then I think that, you know, they should be able to want to refer someone to an organization with or without pay because they want them to be part of such a exciting organization. But, you know, I do think that if you do offer more money, that they, maybe they will go a little bit further and try to find that individual than they would before.
See, I'm going to offer a counter opinion and tell me what you think about this. Here's my fear with focusing your referral program around money. I think it will absolutely increase the number of referrals that you have, no doubt. The question becomes, will they be qualified referrals? And I think there's a way to structure that maybe where it could definitely ensure that you get quality based off of maybe tiered payouts and things like that. But I mean, for a lot of companies, their referral fee is a flat fee, right? You bring us a hire,
right,
and you get paid. And I don't know about you, but I'm betting there's a lot of employees that could coach people on what to say to get through the interview process, and then you end up with an attrition issue. Am I being too jaded? I don't know. What do you think?
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, they can coach them in saying the right things, but you know, I would like to think that most of the referrals, you know, are people that, you know, do have the skills that to do the job that would be a good fit. But I understand your point, and it's well taken.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. I've seen both ways. I've seen really successful recruiting programs, recruiting referral programs. In fact, one of them was with a company I worked with, Kate Hoffman, and it was very tiered. And so really you got a little bit of money up front if you got somebody in the door. You got more money if they stayed for, you know, 6 months or whatever it was. I don't remember anymore. And then you got a nice payoff at the end if they made it past a year. So you were really invested in finding people that you knew that could make it a year. And in recruiting, you don't make it a year unless you know what you're doing. But so, I mean, I've seen it work. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I think there's a lot of thought that goes into a recruiting program. So I'm sorry, a referral program. Obviously, there's a lot of thought in a recruiting program. I think there's a lot of thought that needs to go into referral programs, and I wonder if we're giving them the actual the amount of thought that they need. Sorry, let's reset because I clearly lost the ability to talk. It's 12:18. If you're just now joining us, we are talking with Will Thompson. I am the guest host today. I'm Crystal Miller. You can follow along with us at #DTHR. For DriveThruHR, and I don't know about you, but I just saw some breaking news that I think maybe leads into something that's pertinent to recruiting. Did you see the breaking news about the woman that was beheaded in at her job in Oklahoma today?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, we'll do a quick intro into this so we can segue on to how that actually is relevant to recruiting. But turns out there is a Vaughn Foods owner someone at Vaughn Foods was beheaded. The SS converted to Islam and beheaded one of his coworkers. I don't know all of the details about that. And obviously, that's shocking and horrible. But where I'm going with that is I'm going to guess that Vaughn Foods is going to have some sort of a reputational issue to manage. They're not going to be alone in that. There's a lot of companies that do. Have you experienced, you don't have to say the company if you have you ever experienced having to manage the recruiting process through a reputational crisis, a company
yeah.
reputational crisis? How
yeah.
do you go about that?
You know, it's difficult. I think that I've had this a number of times. I mean, you it's kind of like Penn State. You know, what a great college, what a great legacy, but what a shame that, you know, all those things happened at Penn State, you know, years ago with Joe Paterno and his staff. But, you know, it takes rebuilding. It takes rebuilding of trust. You know, it tells, you know, you have to tell your story over and you know, it was an isolated incident, obviously, or maybe more than one, but you just have to continually, you know, recruit the right people to bring in the right people to kind of change the image. You know, and sometimes the thought of renewing an image excites people. So, it is not easy, and it's not fun anytime you have to do that, and it makes it a very difficult job for the recruiter. But at the same time, you can turn it or spin it to make it look like you're doing something about it to make a difference, to bring in the right people so that thing doesn't happen again.
Fair enough. You know, I think a lot of that has to do with owning it, right? So sometimes that's counterintuitive to what companies, particularly in the legal department, would like you to do, right? So, I mean, if there's an issue, rather than trying to say, no, there's no problem, maybe it's, yeah, we are aware. This, you know, we're not there yet. We're working towards the fix. Obviously, with one-off things like what happened today at Von Food, I don't know that that's an issue with the company as much as just bad things can happen anywhere, right? But maybe that
they
has
can.
Something to do with security. You know, I don't know. But whatever it is, just owning it, I think, goes a really long way. But often we're told not to do that. So when you are told you can't own this or you can't own accountability to it, how do you instill that trust?
You know, I mean, I think what you said is you should own it. And it's very difficult to instill trust when there's negative feedback about your organization. But, I mean, like I said, I think you can talk about the positive things that your organization's doing, you know, and share the good stories rather than all the negative press. But it is a very difficult situation.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think being able to point to, hey, the news cycle that's going on right now isn't the only thing that's going on in our company is a really good thing. And honestly, I personally think that's a lot of the benefit to employer branding because you're going to, I mean, I think every company is going to have hiccups or bad earnings reports or something that happens. The degree of severity, obviously, is wide. But when it does, putting out those positive messages can help balance out some of the negative, if you've already been doing it. I think the trick to that is if you start putting out good messages right when there's bad messages, you know, and there's something bad going on, I think the, I don't know how much people would trust those good messages, but if you have been consistently sharing what your company culture is like, positive things that happen, and your teamwork and all of those things, I don't know, I kind of think it helps balance it out a bit when bad things hit. What do you think?
I 100% agree. I don't have anything to add to what you just said.
Well, excellent. I'm glad we could clear that up. No, if all things were that easy, right? We could, like, rule the world or something.
Yeah.
All right. So next up on the docket, sourcers versus recruiting. So I've got two questions. One,
okay.
Are sourcers – Has the term sourcer morphed to really being just a different way of saying recruiter at this point? Or are there still differences in the two? And if so, what are they, in your opinion?
So an effective recruiter has to source, period. And I think recruiting has become an art. I mean, no longer are you able to just go to a job board and find a resume. You really need to use your social networks. You need to be creative on how you find individuals. It is truly an art. And I think that sourcing and recruiting go hand in hand. I mean, it depends on, you know, which way you look at it. You know, some companies are set up as they have just sourcers and just recruiters because of the volume. And I definitely think there is a value to that because some companies have to, you know, move people through the process, and people don't have time to source. But I think the best recruiters out there are able to effectively do both, to source and recruit the individuals, because you really do have to find. Otherwise, you know, a recruiter can just be seen as a pencil pusher, you know, and that's really not – that's not the job of the recruiter. It's able to – the ability to move someone through the process, convince them of their the job and things like that.
So I think that's fair. Once upon a time, though, weren't sourcers the people that found the people that recruiters talked to?
Yeah, I mean, like I think a lot of companies are still set up that way. But I think that you know, the really good recruiters, the people that are going to be successful, I mean, the sourcers can't find everybody, you know. And
right.
If a recruiter can't say, I'm just managing the relationship, because they're going to be unsuccessful. So, I mean, the recruiters that are going to be really good are going to be able to do both. But, yeah, I mean, there are definitely great sourcers out there that really have a knack for finding individuals, and there are people that are better at just, you know, recruiting individuals or just moving people through the process as well. But, you know, I think the most effective ones and the people that are going to, in the future, you're going to see the people that can do both responsibilities together well.
Fair enough. Well, we've got about 4 minutes left. If you could share anything with this audience, and guess what, you can, what would it be?
So I think that, you know, it's becoming increasingly difficult to, and I'll kind of go to Kevin Wheeler's speech that we heard at TalentNet, but the people are, it's going to be more of a contingent workforce in the future. I loved that speech. I thought it hit home. I mean, so I think that as recruiters, we're really going to have to offer something to the millennials and to new employees to really make them, you know, stay in an organization. You know, I think that the days of the big blue, of someone being with someone for IBM for 20 years, are gone. So for recruiters, our jobs are going to be becoming increasingly difficult, because we have to find ways to not only attract but to retain these employees so we can have longevity. So culture becomes extremely important within that. So that's something else I had to add.
No, I think that's fair. So if retention is going to become more of a focus in the future, how do we then work that into metrics for recruiters? I mean, how do we start grading recruiters based off of higher talent that stays?
So, I mean, I think it goes back to our conversation earlier where we talked about, you know, it is the recruiter's responsibility to you know, kind of make sure they stay. I mean, from the beginning where you talk to them to when they're onboarded to 3 to 6 months later, I mean, it's about keeping them engaged, keeping them interested in, and, you know, making sure that they're happy within the organization. And then, you know, just making sure that 6 months down the line, 12 months down the line, they're being hired, and if they're staying with the company. And if they aren't staying with the company, then maybe we need to do something in our recruiting efforts and find a different kind of individual.
That's fair. All right, so we've got about 60 seconds left. Where can people find you?
So you can find me at Will Recruits on Twitter. I do have my own website, www.bullseyerecruiting.net. And then you can find me on LinkedIn at Will Thompson, Thomson, without a P.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. You've been a fantastic guest today. I hope you have a fabulous weekend. And to everybody listening, the regular drive-through HR hosts will be back next week, so be sure to join us. Thank you so much, everybody, and we are going to head on out of here.
Thanks,
a great
Crystal.
Day.
Bye.
Bye.